whether it's my business or any business out there, you like, I'm a firm believer in my heart of hearts that it's not about having resources, it's about being resourceful, right? And everything that you need is already around you. It's just the fact if you can see it or not.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
All right, guys. Welcome back, EYL, LA edition.
This is gonna I thought you were going to say we home again.
Well, second home, for sure, for sure. Home.
Third home, Atlanta. Don't forget Atlanta.
Atlanta, Miami, LA.
We home.
We have a lot of different homes.
So there you go.
But this is something that we've been looking forward to for a long time. Shout out to our good friend, Charlamagne Tha God. Yeah. So I think he was the first person that actually told me about Humble. And Humble is actually his business advisor. Financial advisor, life advisor,
wealth manager.
Wealth manager. So that was the first time I actually heard about him. And then we interviewed Bobby Wagner, and Bobby Wagner had mentioned Humble as well. I saw you put that clip on your Instagram.
Yeah, it was a nice clip.
So Humble Lou Conga.
Yeah.
Conga, that's perfect.
Okay.
Shout out to Shadi on the pronunciation.
So Humble, he is actually the CEO of Lifeline Financial Group. So Lifeline Financial Group is a boutique financial planning firm, wealth management firm, with three locations, mm-hmm. LA, Denver, and Houston. They have 50 employees, and they manage over $500 million in assets, right?
Yeah, half a billion, yeah.
Half a billion does sound better.
Sounds better.
A little over half a billion.
But it's a full-service financial planning firm. So they have tax planning, mm-hmm. they have wealth management, they have estate planning, and they have, you know, different areas, and they have different people like that'll work with a client. So, and they work with very high profile clients,
yep.
in sports and entertainment. Some of their clients, you might have heard of them.
Maybe.
Issa Rae.
Yep.
We talked about Charlamagne Tha God, Lonzo Ball,
yeah.
Bobby Wagner.
My God.
Just to name a few. Yeah. So, it's really dope, and I'm really excited to have this conversation because anybody that watches EYL, they know that. That's actually was my background before doing this. Was for 12 years, I was a financial advisor, helping people with, you know, investments and insurance, estate planning, stuff like that. And that was my original plan. My original plan was to scale it onto the level like that you're at, because I saw the need, especially for sports entertainment. It always bothered me that all of these guys have all of these money, but most of their representation is white.
Yeah,
for sure. It's not like, you know, it's not of the culture. Mm-hmm. So when I found out about you, I'm like, oh, this is actually dope, because that's something that I had always kind of envisioned. That was my first plan to actually grow a firm to the level that you're at right now. So kudos to you, first and foremost.
Thank you. Because
I know firsthand that it's not
easy. There were some athletes that we was close to.
Yeah.
We almost had a few.
Yep.
That's another story. He was close. I was like, yo, Shadi, get it. We all out of here.
Yep.
Shout out to the nine.
Yes, we did. Yep. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation, because, you know, talking about how you grew your business and working with clients and actually growing out a firm.
Yeah.
Because, you know, being a CEO of a firm, you actually have to manage personnel, not only clients, but you manage the personnel as well. Yeah. So putting all that, and your backstory is crazy as far as like where you come from. And
incredible.
Your journey is like a movie.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Man, I'm honored to be here, man. I got so much respect for you too. You know, we all feel like soldiers of the same war, trying to create financial literacy for our community. And what you guys have done is unbelievable. And the fact that you guys would even think of to have me on, and I'm honored. I'm here full of humility, man, ready to serve and share my story. But I'm honored to be here, man.
You're very humble.
Humble. Yeah. All pun intended. I always know like the type of person we're going to get when they start asking personal questions about us. I'm like, oh, they really rock with us.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Troy, you miss teaching? Like, oh, he really knows I was a teacher. Are you still doing that financially? That's dope, man. So I appreciate you for being here. Yeah. It's going to be a classic.
Yeah.
We know that in advance.
For sure.
No pressure.
For sure.
So let's get into this. All right. So like I said, your journey is very interesting, right? So Can you tell a little bit about your journey as far as coming from Uganda, coming to the States, and how did you get introduced to the world of financial planning?
Yeah, no, that's a, man, that's a really great question. And, you know, it's like you wake up and you see what life has become, you know, but the journey, I think, is like what life is about, you know. So mine started in Uganda, East Africa. I come from a small little village called Masaka. Well, actually, the village is called Masamvu, but the district's called Masaka. Mm-hmm. So very, very, very humble beginnings. I grew up like in this mud, you know, this mud hut, like a little mud house, like no electricity, no indoor plumbing, walking every single day to fetch water. You know, at the time, you know, 3 out of 4 kids are dying before the age of 5 because famine and malaria and polio is killing everybody.
3 out of 4 kids?
Yeah, so wow. 75% of kids, you know. That's crazy. You know, in my own family, you know what I mean? I lost both of my sisters, you know, to those living conditions. You know, I come from a nightmare that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy if I had one, you know, per se. But so I'm born and raised in Uganda. Now, you got to imagine my father and my mother, you know, they grew up. So the whole country has been ruled by dictators to this day. I think the most famous one people know of is Idi Amin.
Idi Amin, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's been dictator after dictator. You know, Idi Amin to Mbote to Museveni. I mean, we've never had a peaceful transfer of power. So, and by the way, my story, I don't want the audience to feel like a poor humble. I'm the voice of my people. So my story is the same story for anybody that grew up in Uganda at this time. You know, I'm just really lucky to have made it out to be able to tell it, and to be able to be like a testimonial or a poster of the Ugandan spirit and who we are as people. But so my parents, they grew up in those regimes, right? Idi Amin and Mbote. And at the time, you know, my father had 10 siblings, right? 9 are deceased. My mother, going through the same situation. Everybody's going through this. I mean, to this day, 50% of the entire population in Uganda is under the age of 15.
That's 15.
How many, 15. That's how wow. many orphans okay. they are, right? Yeah. So we lost a lot. And my father, man, he would fight to get us a political asylum, right? Because you got to imagine, man, he had lost 9 of his siblings, and then now he's losing children, my sisters. You know, so me and my brother are still alive, and him and my mother just fighting to get us out of Uganda. And through the grace of God, man, when I'm like 11 years old, I get a political asylum. And a political asylum allows you to escape the bondage that you're in and go to a place where it's safe, right? So we came to Denver, Colorado, and you can imagine, man, I'm from Uganda, man. I'm from Masaka. Like, I literally grew up 23 degrees under the equator, and then boom, you know what I mean? I'm 11, and I'm in
snow for the first time.
I had never seen snow, let alone white people, right? So,
what
so
is
everything,
this?
So everything is a complete culture shock, but... But I feel I'm so grateful that it happened for me. And I remember, man, getting those shoes and walking on that plane and knowing that on one hand my life is going to be spared, but on the other hand, knowing I'm leaving everything and everything I've ever known behind, you know. So I landed in Denver, and so when you get here, man, it's a crazy cultural shock, right? And I'm from Uganda, East Africa. So it's a complete culture shock. I mean, so, you know, I'm supposed to be probably like in fifth grade, but I got to start in kindergarten to learn what a noun is, what a verb is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How to speak the language.
They put you in kindergarten?
Well, I mean, I'm with the sixth graders. So they had this program called English as a Second Language.
Oh, yeah, ESL.
So I'm just in there with this, you know what I mean? I'm just in here, like, I'm just
sitting there.
I can't even fit the chairs, but I was really lucky, though, because I had a brain that could comprehend really fast, you know what I mean? So by the time I'm in eighth grade, I really caught up to my peers.
Wow.
Right? And in certain ways, I'm starting to really excel, like in math and science, right? But you know, when my father got here, you know, my mother cleaned people's homes. That's how she put food on the table. She was a housekeeper, and then my father cleaned restaurants at night. You know, he was a janitor. So we trying to, you know, life is starting to kind of come together. You know, as I'm heading into my freshman year of high school, and then my mother has a stroke, and the stroke was so severe, left her paralyzed from the neck down.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So, and my mother was a matriarch of the family, right? The spirit of our family, and they gave her like 6 months to live. So, and they wanted to put like in a hospital, right, where like a nurse assistant can take care of her until a dying day, and my father refused. And he was already my hero, but in that moment he became my example, right? And he said, "No, I'm not doing that." You know, he said if somebody's going to bathe her, take her to the bathroom, brush her teeth, wipe her, it's going to be me. So he sits me down and he says, okay, Humble, I'm going to take care of your mother all day, but you got to take over the cleaning shifts at night. So this is how I'm getting into finance, right? So he sat me down. He says, okay, so this is the plan, man. After school, so I remember like it was yesterday, man. I would wake up at 5:45 in the morning. I'd be at the school stop, a bus stop at 6:45. I'd be at school at 7:15, get back home at 3:30. I would do my homework, eat something, take a nap. And by like 8 o'clock, my old man is dropping me off to clean office buildings and Bennigan's and Applebee's and you name it.
How old are you at this point?
At this point, I'm barely 15.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was in those nights, man, where your friends are at a high school party or playing a sport or, you know, or maybe just resting because they got an exam and you up cleaning toilets and bathrooms. It was in that moment where I said, you know, I got to change the curse of poverty for my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like, man, this curse of poverty has to stop with me. And that's when I started to kind of figure out, like, how can you make that? How could you make that possible? You know? And so every night I would clean, man. Every night I would clean. There'd be some times when my father would come help me if I have like an exam or something. But I clean so much. And when you're cleaning that much, I don't care how much you shower or put cocoa butter on, you can't take the stench of bleach off your hands. But I knew that they, like, if I gotta find a way to change the curse of poverty for my family, you know. And the first time I remember, I had a beautiful high school principal, man, and he's passed on, but he was incredible, man. His name was John Buckner, and Mr. Buckner was like, he was a legend in all of our eyes who went to high school at the time, and he just took a liking to me. And I used to spend a lot of time in his office. I was like the kid who was in the principal's office, was never in trouble, you know.
Yeah.
He knew my story, and one day I asked him, I said, Mr. Buckner, man, how do I change the curse of poverty for my family? And he was like, man, you got to learn how money works. And it just like, I was like, what do you mean how money works? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Money works? What does that actually mean? And he said, okay, man. He introduced me to Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you guys read that book. I mean, mm-hmm. It just changed my life. You know, like Napoleon wrote his principles of, and this was the first book that I read that didn't teach you what to think, but how to think, you know, and how to make sure that your dreams are bigger than your bedroom window, right? How to think positively, how all these different things is just inspiring me. It's probably the first book that I got a sense of worth, right? Mm-hmm. And then he also introduced me to Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that book as well. And I was like, oh man, you know, so I started to feel really, really, really inspired. Now, mind you, my mother is fighting at this point. So she's alive past 6 months, you know, through her courage and God's grace and my father's love, she's fighting. So she ended up staying alive my whole high school career. So I literally became a professional janitor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To this day, I'm not taking out the trash. I'm done.
You've done. I'm done. I've did my time served.
I remember being really inspired to where my senior year, I asked my father if I can drop one of the restaurants to pick up a paper route so I can have access to the Financial Times. And so then he introduced me to Warren Buffett, and I started reading about all these luminaries, you know. And I said, man, I'm going to do something about this. But I had no idea what I was going to do until I got to college, right? So my mother ends up passing away from the stroke eventually. Now, in my culture, you know, it was important. In our culture, we have to bury her back where we're from so she can go to rest with her ancestors. And so we're en route to go have the funeral in Uganda.
Yeah.
And then my father has a heart attack, and he passes away.
You do it all without breaking a sweat. Like being a boss exec, to Tuesday tennis, to homework. Why do kids have so much homework? Family dinners, lunches, brunches, trips to the vet, and a weekend getaway that's anything but a getaway. And you do it all in style. Even when you have back-to-back conference calls on top of the kids' orchestra recitals, not to mention your side hustle. That's why they created the fully reimagined Infiniti QX60, a luxury SUV as functional as it is stylish. And as versatile as it is serene, with premium features like a panoramic moonroof, ample cargo space, and available massaging front seats to bring the ease of luxury to your everyday. Introducing the all-new Infiniti QX60, designed to help you take on life and all the chaos that may come with it in style. Learn more at InfinityUSA.com. Now, with extremely limited availability, contact your local retailer for inventory information.
Yeah. And
En route.
En route. So as you're going.
On an airplane?
Yeah, on an airplane.
He had a heart attack on an airplane?
Yeah, he passed away.
As you're going to your mom's funeral, your dad passes.
Yeah, he actually died en route through Egypt, right? So make a long story short, you know, now I definitely had to put, you know, both parents to rest at relatively almost the same time. You know, it's crazy. So I get back now. At this point, man, I had pretty much lost my entire family and my immediate family, except for my brother, who I would unfortunately lose in a car accident in 2017. But I get back, I'm the only person in America right now, and I was in the library, and I read this article that said 78% of all professional athletes in the NFL were going broke 2 to 3 years after they retired. And I remember reading this article, man, and it broke my heart because I said,
This is when you go to New Mexico?
Yeah, this when I'm back to New Mexico. Yeah, Lobos.
Lobos. So you're coming back, you're going to college.
Yeah, now I'm back, now I'm in school, right? Yeah. And you gotta imagine, it's the hardest moment of my life, man. If life is glass, there's pieces of mine everywhere, right? So I'm just trying to pick up a piece every single day, and I'm a nerd, I love to read. So I spend a lot of time in the library, mostly because they had free tea and free snacks. I just go in there and eat, save some money.
Very important.
You know what I'm saying? So, but I read this article, man, and it broke my heart because these young men were coming from their own struggle, having an opportunity to build generational wealth and freedom for their families, but ending up worse than even they started in most cases. And it didn't make sense to me because they all had these financial advisors and agents and you know, these business teams around them. So how was 8 out of 10 going broke, right? I became obsessed with it. And I was trying to figure out why this was happening, especially to men that look like me at such a rapid rate. Mm-hmm. And the more and more and more that I dug into, it was so negative and disparaging towards these young men. Or they're reckless, they're unintelligent, they're undisciplined. But it didn't make sense to me because they all had these business teams, right? These agents, financial advisors, and everybody. And it became quite clear to me that they were being taken advantage of. Because if you go to a hospital and 8 out of 10 patients are dying 2 to 3 years after they leave that hospital, you're not calling those patients, you know, reckless or unintelligent or undisciplined, right? You're saying, what the hell is going on with the doctors? And so it was in that moment, in the hardest moment of my life, where I said, man, I found it was like almost like God was speaking to me, because this love that I had found in high school for finance was not finding a mission, right? And the more I dug into us as our community, the same thing was happening to our athletes, same thing was happening to our entertainers. And as we know, these are our heroes, mm-hmm. right? This is how we were able to get out of slavery, and we're still entertainment through sports. Like these are our heroes, and they're all ending up in destitute. So I said, I want to do something about this, right? And when you're young, you have no idea how hard it's going to be. But through the grace of God and you know, all of my teammates that work with me, I think we've built the most dynamic business and wealth management firm in the country. For our athletes and our entertainers and our executives, and it's been the honor of my life to lead this firm to ensure that we build generational wealth, which equates to generational freedom. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that's a long story to.
No, that's a powerful story.
No, it was definitely good. It was good to get the backstory.
Yeah,
All right, so let's get into this. So you have, you know, one of the top wealth management firms in the world.
Yeah,
but. All right. What were the steps to do that? As far as like you said, okay, I want to get into finance, right? Did you start working for a firm at first and get your Series 6, Series 7, stuff like that? Like, yeah. What were the steps that you actually got? Because there's a lot of people that are financial advisors, but there's not a lot of people that actually own their own financial plan firm.
Yeah.
Most people work for either, you know, institutions on the insurance side or on the investment side. Like they might work for like Fidelity, or they might work for like an insurance company. So how did you take the steps to actually, and doing it at a young age, what were the steps to actually go to be an entrepreneur and have, you know, the firm?
That's a really great question, man. You know, I was coming of age in that 2007, 2008 when the world was on fire. The markets had crashed. It was in the greatest, you know.
That's when you came into recession. Business?
Yeah, 2008, 2009.
That's when I came into
business. Yeah, it was crazy, right? And like, you've seen companies around 100 plus years, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, like either they're here on Friday and they're going on Monday. Over the weekends, like trillions of dollars was going.
Yep. September, I remember.
I mean, it was the world. If you guys was in New York, especially. Yeah, the world was on fire, right? It was burning. And I remember coming of age and I'm thinking, man, how is this possible? You know, I'm doing my research and I realized right away that, and I just want to be respectful, but I realized right away that I don't want to go work at these wirehouses, because if this can happen, if they can make up these products, right, that are illegal, and you know what I mean, and boost these bonds and all these different things that led to the crash of the market, I don't want to be a part of that, right? Mm-hmm. So, and on my mission, I said, I have to build the firm myself. Like, you know, and I, you know what I mean? Like, I have to do it my way. And I know it's going to be the harder way to do it. But I had two goals. I wanted to protect people to look like me. I help them build generational wealth and freedom. And then I wanted to give amazing jobs to people to look like me who wanted to work in this industry, right? And the way to have that type of, to way to serve that mission, I knew I had to take the route that was less traveled and become an, and start the business myself. Now, whether it's my business or any business out there, I'm a firm believer in my heart of hearts that it's not about having resources, it's about being resourceful, right? And everything that you need is already around you. It's just the fact if you can see it or not, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? So when I was starting out, I said, okay, I started researching, you know, people who look like me who was doing this. But at the same time, like I was looking around my University of New Mexico, and I was seeing, I was really big on the campus, and I was seeing like athletes that had a chance to go to the pros that I was really good friends with. So I told them about my dream. I said, hey, this is what I wanted to do, right? This was guys like Glover Quinn, right? Who guys like J.R. Giddens. So these were my peers.
You see what I'm saying? Cali, right? J.R. Giddens?
Yeah, from Oklahoma City, the Red Dirt, where he went and played at Kansas.
Yeah, yeah, he did. He went to Kansas. Yep.
Yeah. So these are men that are my peers, and we all here together. And I said, hey, this is what I want to do. And I want to protect you guys. I want to do this. And they gave me a chance. You know what I mean? And you got to imagine. And that's why, like, I come here with I wake up with an attitude of gratitude, because as hard as we all work and as determined and as purposefully driven as we all are, man, you need Lady Luck to show up, right? You need somebody to believe in you. You know, even at the university that I was at, I don't know if you guys remember the legendary running back Arian Foster, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was
played for Houston.
Houston, yes. Yep. He was at Tennessee at the time in 2007, 2008, and. But his mother worked at UNM at the University of New Mexico, right? So I was able, when everything fell apart for him and he went undrafted and all that stuff, I was able to meet him at the lowest point of his life and guide his career.
Wow.
So there was these people around me that believed in my soul and my spirit that gave me a chance, you know, when I'm 20 years old, right, to build from there. And then, like I said earlier, you know, friends started to bring friends.
Yes.
And that's how we kind of, that's how we kind of,
so,
fire.
So Arian, I mean, he's the biggest client that you had to start
at the time.
At the time,
yeah.
At the time, yeah. At the time.
Well, he was the smallest client I had at the time because he was undrafted. He had $3,200 to his name. We had nothing to manage.
Right. So, yeah. So what was what are you explaining to him? This is what are you telling him? This is what I'm offering, because this isn't like agent story. This is mm-hmm. like I'm about to be a financial wealth planner.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So what's the conversation that you're having? Obviously, the connection with his mom. Do you have to? Like explain to her first and then get in contact with him, and now it's like, all right, now we got this meeting.
Yeah.
What do you explain to him?
Yeah, great question. Yeah. So you're trying to get everybody on board to give this kid a chance, right? So I'm meeting with everybody. But I always knew in my heart of hearts, man, since I was like 6-7 years old, like life has always made sense to me that like you can get all that you want out of life if you can help other people get all that they want out of life. It's that simple. So if I'm sitting down, I'm sitting here with Arian. He has a daughter on the way. He just went undrafted. His dream that he's been chasing since he was 5 years old is gone, right? And now at that moment, everybody's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like God had put me in his life at that particular moment for the war that we're about to go on, right? And so at that point, nobody was around, but he saw like my conviction in just trying to help him get all that he wanted to make sure he can provide for his daughter. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, though he only had $3,200, you know, I tell people all the time that, cause a lot of people feel like, well, when I get rich, when I get wealthy and I have something to manage, that's when I get a financial plan. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, not having a plan is a plan. It's just a really bad one. Mm-hmm. Right. So even for him, you only got $3,200. You gotta look at this like, you gotta look at this like your everything, right? I think one of my greatest gifts in life is like I've never lacked foresight. Like I can see somebody and know what they're gonna be before the world can see it. And meeting him, I knew he was gonna do what he was gonna do because he had a focus and a work ethic that was not gonna be denied, right? But I just had to clear the way so he can just focus on what he had to focus on. And I'm proud, man, because we took that to you know, we went from $3,200 to, you know, to, you know, $60 million, right? So
yeah,
it was a hell of a run.
So when you were just starting out and you was actually managing the clients, mm-hmm, were you, what were you doing? You were doing investment advising, or you were doing insurance, you was doing estate, like what were you actually doing yourself?
Yeah, so we were, so yeah, when I first started, you got to wear all the hats, you know what I mean? So you know, all the bookkeeping, all the accounting, all the insurance planning, you know, estate planning, you know, everything that you do as a financial planner, but then also stuff that's not even your job description, right? Booking flights, concierge, you know, just like whatever they needed, you had to serve them. And as the firm grew, then you brought on more, you know, you brought on more people to kind of help you, right? But initially, you got to wear all the hats, you know.
Yeah. So as you said, as the firm grew, so at what point, how many clients? Was it like a specific number? Like, I got 5 clients, we got to hire somebody else. How did you scale it to add people to work with you to help out with these roles?
It's a gut feel. You know what I mean? And also sometimes you're taking on more than you can afford, just hoping through God's grace. You know what I'm saying? Because like, but also people believe in you along the way. Right. So, you know, like my brother Tony, who you guys know, I was mentoring him for a long time.
That's funny. He said he mentored you.
Here's what he said.
I'm joking. Shout out to Tom.
He teaches me things every day. But, you know, I love our story because when I met Tony, he was, you know, he was already like, you know, doing sports management, working in a law firm, making 6 figures, really successful. And I was mentoring him every step of the way to make sure that he was making the right decisions to be successful in sports. And then, but the whole time in the back of my mind, I knew I was just grooming him to come be my head of sports, right?
Yeah.
So when I was finally ready to make him a job offer, I said, hey, listen, I want you to come join Lifeline, but I'm not paying you that 6 figures. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna pay you $3,000 a month, $10.99, by the way. So don't talk about benefits.
Nah, like we ain't got that.
Oh, and by the way, that nice condo that you have, you gotta when the lease is over, you gotta move in, you know, with your parents. You know what I mean? But if you give me like 3 years, I think we can do something really special, right? And you know, he went home. I remember I had to drive to his dad's house, and you know, these are African father, his African father, and tell his dad why I'm taking his son away from the successful path to move back home. But he believed in me, right? And he joined the firm, and I paid him what I could. And many people did that. Like, I had people that I really respected that left like their CPA jobs, left their financial plan, whatever they were, to come take half money, half, you know, to kind of like take 60% pay cuts, whatever it may take, to join this mission that we were on. And I think sometimes my greatest joy is knowing that we were, you know, that we did it, you know what I mean? And all of those sacrifices wasn't for nothing.
So now you have, like I said, 50 people that work. So you said, you was telling me off air.
Yeah.
When a client comes, they get put with a team, right?
Yeah.
Financial planning team. So I'm going to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because people can have a team, even if they're not with like a firm, they can have different people in their life. So what is a team that a client gets when they come to your firm?
Yeah, it was very important for me to build it was very important for me to have people around the family that are experts and superstars at what they do. Because as you know, like, we all have strengths as financial professionals, right? So
what would you say your strength was or is?
My strength is like, from an investment perspective.
Investing?
That's really my strength. Okay. But then also like, I have the power to influence behavior. Mm. Like, that's what separates me from any other advisor in the world, is like, I can influence behavior. So I can help a client, like I can get the best out of each client. Like, I'll get them to a point where they'll give me the very best of them, right? And then when I can influence that behavior, then we have a real chance at the investments and the strategies.
Yeah, right? Change the mindset.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, I always say, first you form habits, and habits form you. And finance is behavioral, right? It's not, you know, you can give people the tools, but if spiritually, mentally, like if they're not at a certain point, the medicine's not going to work, right? So I think my greatest strength is I can influence behavior, you know, and I learned early that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right? And so if we spend enough time and you really go, okay, man, Humble really has my best interest at heart, I can influence behavior, which leads us to our goals, right? So, but I like to build a team where you have a CFP, a certified financial planner, and this person is really, really skilled in all the tenets of finance, right? And they can be the quarterback to oversee the whole empire. Then I have a CPA too for a particular family. This CPA is really trained in tax planning, auditing, and accounting. So we want to know where every single penny is going and why, right? Mm-hmm. And be that way to see if the CFP has the best numbers to plan for. Then you're also going to have a lawyer, and this lawyer plays like a general counsel for the family, and you know, and interacts with you know other lawyers you may have on your team, whatever the case may be. But having somebody who's always thinking legally about every decision that you're making, because preventative law is better than post law, right? And then you have a chartered financial analyst, you know, a CFA, and this person's brilliant at portfolio construction. You know what I mean? And that's what their passion is. And so when I'm doing a podcast with you gentlemen, I have a team that's actually watching the markets, right, to make sure that their plans are going great. And then you also have your manager, right, your day-to-day person who is just there when life happens. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So what they're always on the ground with you to make sure that to make sure that the client can focus on the vital few while we take care of like the trivial many, if that makes sense.
So the CFA, their job, like you said, is actually putting together like a portfolio.
Yeah, you're just being really brilliant at constructing it. Yeah, and the whole team works together, right? The whole team works together because the CPA is giving the CFP the best numbers, right? So we know exactly what's going on. The CFP is putting together the CFP's looking at the whole wealth holistically, right? Insurance,
the financial plan
holistically. Mm-hmm. But then you have somebody who's surgical, and all they care about is making sure that whatever the goals for that plan is, our investments and our asset allocation is responding to that plan. So you have people in each lane where that's what they've mastered,
yeah.
And then together, there's no holes on the team.
You know what I mean? So yeah. Another part of the team are lawyers, correct?
Yeah.
So like what type of law are you assigning to each one of these circles? What type of practice?
Is it general practice?
Yeah. You want to have a lawyer who's very dangerous, like a general counsel for the family. And then when specific things come up, maybe, you know, litigation, stuff like that, then they can run point, find the right legal team and run point and all that. But gotcha. At least you have a lawyer next to you who just keeping the legal bills down, but also the things that we can tackle, right? Mm-hmm. And then the things that we have to outsource legally, we can outsource legally. But it's very, very important for me to have lawyers in house that are dealing with the client day to day.
So you have like the general, it's like a doctor. You have the general practitioner, and then if they need somebody that's like in the entertainment space specifically, then that lawyer can recommend another lawyer
specifically for that lane, and we can all collaborate.
Trust.
Exactly. I'm big on collaborations. Yeah. I'm big
entertainment law, all that.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, so like a lot of our lawyers, they have great backgrounds in structuring private equity deals and structuring endorsement deals that have to do with equity, you know, financial. But hey, if you need a litigator, you know what I mean? That's not what we'll find the right person. We'll collaborate. But you always have somebody with you that's running point on those discussions and protecting the family. Mm-hmm. You know? So I try to put together like a real business team around these families and then collaborate with other great minds to get the job done. Yeah.
So you build this circle around the family. Yeah. But you said one of the biggest threats to wealth is generosity.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that there's boundaries set for the outside people.
Yeah.
So how does that work, right? Because you make money and you accumulate. You've come from low income, right? And you've now made money. There's that guilt, that survivor's remorse, sure, right? I got to help everybody else. So how does the team tell the actual family members and friends who've grown up with you now, here are the boundaries, or tell the athlete or the entertainer, here are the boundaries that are set for you and you got to stick to them?
Yeah, great question. You know, and, you know, I understand the survivor's guilt deeply. You know what I mean? You're talking to a man who's lost his entire family, right? My father, my mother, my sisters, my siblings, everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So then you make it and you become, you know, whatever people define as success. You're a multimillionaire. And you do feel, and I feel in my heart of hearts, is you got to help because so many people helped you get here, right? So I understand these clients at a level that I understand them intricately because I'm going through the same thing. You know, I'm the person in my family that's done that, right? And I think sometimes what people say is like, watch out for your family. Watch out for your family, right? And it's so disrespectful to the family. It's very disrespectful to the family, right? Because you got actual people in your life, man, that sacrificed for you to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I hate when these rookies go to like NFL symposiums or NBA symposiums, and they tell them, "But watch out for your mom. You know, watch out for your uncles. Watch out." Yo, these people actually paid for your little league. So right. so these people, like, you know, we come from a community, man, that's helped us get where we're supposed to go. So for me, the key is to sit down with the family, and I call it like family governance, right? Sit down with the family and like put together a strategy for the people. It's like you can't take everybody with you, but who are the vital people, and then how we put together a plan for all of them.
Right.
And then they're gonna have to be patient. What you can do year one is gonna be drastically different than what you can do year 10. Right. But you need to think about them too. And as you get old, and as you get become more and more seasoned, you're helping them, but you're also putting them in position where they can fly on their own. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm big on bringing the family with you, and the people that helped you, but coming up with clear ways to make sure that because if the tree can get strong, they know the branches can flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you got to get the family to give the time for the tree to get really, really strong. Yeah. But those branches need to flourish as well.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard somebody speak on that, like, in that terms. It was like, if I can make sure that the family's straight, they're going to make sure that the person that's generating the wealth is straight.
Yeah.
And so curating the plan, like, I know we grew up in, and we talked about the Iverson story.
Right.
And it was like, wait, how did he squander all that? Well, he was taking care of a lot of people that were around him, extended family at that.
Mm-hmm.
But not having a plan for them, it could cost him.
Absolutely. And everybody can't go. You know what I mean? Everybody can't go. Everybody can't go. Yeah. So, and not everybody needs to go.
Yeah.
But there are people in your life, man, that if it wasn't for them, there's no way you'd be where you are. And there's a humility that comes from honoring that. You know what I'm saying? Before I ever bought a home, before I ever bought a car, before I ever spent any of the money I've ever made, I retired my aunt, you know, who's the last surviving sibling on my dad's side. Because when my parents got sick and I lost everything, man, this woman prayed for me every single day. I mean, she would send me $5 when I didn't have $30 in my account. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like she would go clean homes. And then, like, you know, take me to TJ Maxx to get a shirt so I don't have to wear the same things to school. I remember all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you fully can't, you can't be blessed and not be a blessing. But how you do it, you know what I mean, is what separates those that are able to build wealth and those who squander it is how you do it, right? And so I tell all my, and I hate to use the word clients, but I tell all these families I'm lucky to represent, you know, just call me. Let me put together the plan. Let me be the bad guy. Let me do everything. But the people that are vital, they got to come with you, because success isn't about being on a hill by yourself anyway. So there's a way you can get everybody up there with you, but it takes time, and everybody has to buy into the plan.
So let's talk about this financial planning team again. I want to get back to this because I think there's lessons for the average person where it's like people will say, okay, well, obviously if you Lonzo Ball, you can afford to have, you know, all these different people. But just the average person, it's like you could have, you know, an accountant, that's somebody that's doing your taxes, somebody that, you know, if you're working with a financial advisor and they can, you know, help you with like investing or insurance and stuff like that. And then a lawyer, you know, to help you, you know, with a will. You don't have to be rich to have that, but it's important to have different people in place.
Yeah.
So I say that to say, I just asked about a couple different areas of that. So like from the tax planning standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. What is some things that like from your clients that like if you get a client and you'll do like an audit that you see like there's mistakes that were made or like things that are common mistakes with like athletes or entertainers that they're not taking full advantage of the tax law? Like, you know, what is some of your CPAs doing to kind of help your clients out with that?
You know, the athletes and entertainers are extremely, extremely complicated. That's why I have like a tax department, tax experts, because these guys are paying taxes in every place, in every city that they're, you know, in states that they're playing, you know,
state and maybe the city tax. So
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. You got state, you got city tax,
jock tax,
that jock tax. Mm-hmm. I mean, these things are complicated. You see an athlete's tax return. It's like this, right? So it's important to have, once again, experts in that lane that deal with tax strategies every single day. And then obviously entertainers, I mean, entertainers don't get taxes taken out. Right. So if you do a show, if you do a movie and, you know, you make, you know, they say they'll give you $20 million, you're getting a $20 million check. But that check has taxes. It has all types of things. Right. So I think a lot of people, what we try to do is make sure, first of all, set up the right corporate structure. You know what I mean? And try to get your money into an entity and not get paid directly. right? That because when you put it into a business, you have a lot of more freedom for tax write-offs, a lot of more freedom for protection from a liability perspective. Also, man, track every single penny and do tax planning throughout the year. Right. Don't wait until the end of the year to say, oh, here are all my receipts. No, have an accountant that's actually tracking every single penny, every single month, every single week. That way we are planned. You know, we are maximizing every tax deductions as we go forward. I mean, the IRS is going to be your number one enemy. You know what I mean? I mean, they're coming for it. They're coming for 50% of your income the second you earn it. So you got to be very, very detailed in your bookkeeping, your corporate structures. You know, and there's so many. Things that you can use as a business expense if you're able to have an entity set up, right? That you can't really do if you're just a W-2 or just an individual. But it's you got to make sure that your accounting and your tax team, you know, is up on those things, especially when you start to go into foreign entities as well. So now you're making money in Peru, you're making money in Canada, you're making money outside of the United States. I mean, the tax structure gets very, 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 very complex. Yeah,
especially for artists, because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I know for athletes it might be a little harder because it's like you're getting paid W-2. Yeah. So you're an employee. So it's kind of hard for, like, to get paid other than that because you're an employee. But for artists or people in the entertainment space, like if you're doing a show, the money doesn't necessarily have to go to you directly. It can go to a C corp, whatever you you develop. Now it's like, yeah, all right, well, all these people that I have with me, now I'm actually operating as a business,
exactly,
as opposed to just payroll. getting Now you can actually take deductions and do it the right way, as opposed to just getting a bunch of money in your personal name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's more flexibility. I think people don't fully understand that, especially like on the entertainment side.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're able to do that. On the athlete side, you can as well, because as you mentioned, the team is just going to pay you W-2, so you don't have a lot of flexibility there. But all of your endorsements
yeah,
income, you know, set up an entity and have all your endorsement income come into that entity and then kind of put the same structure in place on your marketing side, right, to help you with that. So there's different things you can do. But you know, the key though is really having a team that you can trust, that really knows what they're doing, but really has your best interest at heart.
Let me ask you this, because we see, especially on the entertainment side, we see Aretha Franklin, yeah, we see Prince, we see Michael Jackson, a bunch of, we can go a long list of people that when they die, they don't have a will in place.
Yeah.
They don't have a trust in place. So talk about, like, how important is it to do the estate planning and, like, having a will, educating your clients on why a will is important,
right,
why a trust is important, the different, yeah, types of trust, things of that nature. Like, you know, when I was in the insurance business, irrevocable life insurance trust, you could put the life insurance inside of a trust. Like,
yeah,
talk about that a little bit if you can.
You know, it's everybody knows how important it is to have a, you know, to have a will.
I don't think they do, though.
No. Here's what happens, though, because everything is like generational trauma and behavioral.
Right.
It's just hard for our community to think about death. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's the fight of my life to get clients to sit down and talk about death. But it comes from a place of so much pain for generations. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, and I can honestly say, like, when you, I think in our community, let's take the athletes, the entertainers, or the rich people out of it. I think the every day-to-day person needs to have at least a revocable trust and a will, period. The same, you know what I mean? The same way you have car insurance, the same way you have, you know, you got to have these things. But I'll probably say 70%. I mean, if you think about your friends, people that you love, or family members, how many of them really have a revocable trust or a will? I'll probably say 80% of them don't, right?
Probably more than that.
Probably more than 100%. That.
95%.
Yeah. And these are like vital, 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 vital things because, you know, anybody thinks about death, but let's forget death, right? Let's just say you got in a car accident and you are alive, but incapacitated to where you can't make certain decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, who's going to help you, like, with your life while you're still living, maybe, but you can't do it. You know, say you get a coma, you're in a coma for 3 months.
Power of attorney.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how you got to have these power of attorneys in place. You got to have your medical power of attorneys in place. And you got to have these conversations with your family members, right? So you know who's in position to help you when these things happen.
What's that conversation like? Because you said the average age of your clients is like 20 in the 20s?
Yeah.
They're in their 20s, right? So you're dealing with people who have dealt with emotional trauma, but also financial trauma.
Yeah.
So what's that like, explaining this to them at such a young age? Like, let's take example Anthony Edwards, who's the number one pick, right? Like,
yeah.
You're telling the 19-year-old kid at this point of his life, you should be thinking about things. Like, you become not only like a wealth manager, but you're like the teacher now.
Yeah, for sure.
What's that? Yeah. What are these conversations like when you have them at such a young age with your clients?
Yeah.
Well, your family. I don't even want to call them clients anymore.
Yeah.
Your family.
Yeah, my family. Yeah, great question. You know, it's, like you say, it's a lot of teaching and understanding why. You know what I mean? Why it's important. Why it's important. But there's certain things where they're just non-negotiables with me, right? Because as a black financial and wealth manager, you know, I can't, that room for error, I don't have room for error like the other counterparts, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to get these things in line, and we have to get them done, not only because it protects you, but if you don't have it and something happens to you, they're going to bury Humble Lukanga. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But those conversations are tough because they've never thought about it before, and nobody in the family has ever thought about it before. So this is a whole new world when you come. You're 19 years old and you're worth, you know, millions and millions of dollars. Like, that's not an everyday thing, you know. So that's why I always go back to like love and trust, you know. And that's why I got into this business. It's like, man, this is a people business, man. And nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
And once these young men or these young women understand like my heart and what I'm here to serve, I'm able to have these conversations. And sometimes, you know, I'm 35 years old. Sometimes I'm more like of a father figure,
right,
you know, or like an uncle. And most times I might be the only black man that they've ever met in their lives that's like successful, right? Or like that, or that they can kind of listen to, right? So you got to play a bunch of different roles, man.
Yeah.
You know, wealth manager, father, uncle, disciplinarian, but most important is teaching, you know.
So let me ask you this, as far as like a broad range philosophical question in regards to investing, because I know it's one of your strong points. How important is it to diversify? Because I know a lot of people, or maybe not, but a lot of people, I don't know if your clients specifically, they might just want to put all their money in like just Bitcoin or all their money and just buy a Bored Ape. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, what do you tell them and what's your philosophy on diversification when it comes to investing?
Right. You know, so let me take a step back. I want to be as authentic as humanly possible from my perspective. So the clients that I manage, right, who our goal is to build this wealth for generations to come, right? They're making their wealth in their art, you know, movies, whatever it is, writing, directing, athletes, or maybe they sold a business. So they've accumulated wealth. So now my job when I get in there is to make sure that we take this wealth, we protect it, we grow it, and then we transfer it. So when I'm dealing with my particular clients, diversification is key. Right. Because you never, ever, ever want to put all your eggs in one basket to say. So, you know, there's different asset classes and you got to be very careful that you are very diversified. That way, if one asset class goes down, you still have a portfolio that's strong. Right. Now, if I'm talking to a younger me, right, who's has a dream of building a company, has a dream of being an entrepreneur, has a dream of escaping poverty, has a dream of changing the trajectory of his family's life. You don't have the luxury of diversification if you're trying to be an entrepreneur. Like, you gotta go all in. You gotta go all in. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, like, if you really want to go, if you really want to change the trajectory of your life, like, you have to be an inch wide and a mile deep of where you're going to invest everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so when I was building Lifeline, 100,000% of everything that I had was in Lifeline. I was not diversified at all. This thing has to make it or I'm done.
It has to work or it has to work.
Bottom
line.
Right. And you got to believe, you know, and as an entrepreneur, man, you may look at even like my the clients whose wealth that I manage that are Silicon Valley founders or the building companies. When I look at their wealth, I mean, 90% of their wealth is in the stock of their company.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, I got control over that. Like, I got control of what I can grow this company. You know what I mean? I mean, I have much. So it depends on what your goals are and where you are in your life. You know what I'm saying? But when you're speaking from an entrepreneur who's trying to build from 0 to 100, you have to be late. You know, your focus may have to be singular. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I got you. So, Rashad Bilal, Humble Lukanga.
Yeah.
Your names alone separate you in the financial service industry, right?
Yeah.
I wanted you to talk about some of the barriers that you face and why you're so intentional on who you work with now, right? You're choosing your clients very specifically for a reason.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I'm sure, Rashad, you can attest to this.
When I read the story, I'm like, I felt there's so many similarities knowing his story and yours. So
yeah. You know, I remember being young, man, and I read this stat that said you have a better chance playing in the NBA than being a black executive in finance, right? I think this, you know, it was like 1.5 or 1.7 or something, like just like, and I always I was like, why do people publish these stats? Like, why do people publish it? Is it to like derail somebody's dream? Is it to show us like this impossible? Is it to show us that we're not welcome?
Mm-hmm.
Yo, I've been in a fight of my life in finance. The fight of my life, because I'm a CFP, certified financial planner. I've built this firm with the most amazing human beings you're ever going to meet in your life. Intelligent, like just incredible team. We work with the biggest names in the world. You know, I sit on the board of trustees at the University of Mexico as the finance chair. I've done everything you could possibly do to be a qualified candidate, right? to help manage somebody's wealth. And they still question your intelligence just because of the color of your skin. You know what I mean? Like, I was having a conversation with a dear friend of mine, his Indian, and I was writing a letter of recommendation for his child to go to college. And we were just sitting back at dinner. And he says, you know, hey, look what we've done for ourselves. You know, two brown immigrants who came to this America. I mean, who came to America. Look what we've done. And I said, you know what, man? You know, yeah. You know, I understand what you're saying, but my journey is different than yours. Like, you know what I mean? Like, our journey is completely different. And he says, I said, what do you mean? I said, you know, we both immigrants. I said, listen, I'm black in America, man. like when I go into a conference room, when I go into a meeting, when I go into anything, the first thing they do is question your intelligence. You know what I mean? They don't question your intelligence. They may make fun of your accent, but they don't question your intelligence. They expect you to be brilliant. They expect for you to be smart.
Right.
So when you're in finance, and like you said, I didn't start at a wirehouse, right? I didn't go to like JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs or UBS. Like, I literally built this thing from the ground up independently, right? They question you every step of the way. I used to have this joke, you know, with Tony. It's just a metaphor. I'm not saying it's true, but it's a metaphor. I said, man, I can't sign Peyton Manning because I'm black, and I can't sign Cam Newton because I'm black, right? It's like, because they marginalize you every step of the way,
yeah.
Right? And it's, you know, and the people that you're here to serve, and I want to be respectful, but like, you know, slavery won. You know what I mean? Like, you got to understand the prism with which I view the world. I'm from East Africa, Uganda, right? But I'm in America, so I live two lives, right? I live as a Ugandan in my heart, that is coming from Uganda, born and raised, and then as a black American in America. And when you come to this country, right, it's a shock, because even back home, when we have like poverty, we have all these different things, but we have each other. And so we have our language, we have our song, we have our tradition, we have our heritage. So you never think about the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just never crossed my mind, right? And then you come to America and it quickly reminds you, you know what I mean? And it does not matter what you accomplish. Like, they just marginalize you every step of the way. So it's to this day, you know, I tell you a story that just happened literally this past week. I have a client, this guy, you know, a great client coming out of a particular university in this upcoming 2022 draft that has a chance to be a top 10 pick. Special, special young man. So, a black young man, his family, highly educated, right? Lawyers, engineers, like, they did a thorough interview process for agencies and financial advisors, and they chose me, right? On his team is another kid who's extremely talented, white kid, who's also going to be a top 10 pick, you know. So as the young man is leaving college, he goes and sits down with this particular coach, white coach, and for his exit meeting. So the coach asked him, who you signing with as far as your agent or financial advisor? He says this. He says, you know, Humble Lukanga. So then the coach tells him, Humble Lukanga, you know, doesn't Google me, doesn't do his research, doesn't even just says, okay, Lukanga, where's that from? He's all, you know, he's East African, black. He goes, can you have him send over his engagement letters and his social security number so we can do a background check on him? I was livid. I said, listen, did they ask the white kid if his financial advisor can turn in the engagement letters and their social security number? I said, you know what? I said, if that's the process for this university, I'm all in. But if that's the Humble Lukanga special, tell him I said, fuck him. Get him on the phone. You know what I mean? But it's just like stuff like that happens all the time, no matter where you are in your career.
Yeah, right? Like the higher you go, the more you see. But it's tough to even get to your level to see that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it doesn't change. And that's why I tell anybody, it's just like, just keep going, man. Because it doesn't, there'll never be a time in, you know, there'll never be a time in this country where we don't get marginalized like that, especially in finance. You know what I mean? And so they question your intelligence every step of the way, but you just have to keep being dynamic.
So how do you get clients? Like, what's your process for referrals? Like, is it through center of influences? Do you actually recruit people? Like, what's the...
You know, great question. Like, there's some moments in time where I see somebody and I know I was born to represent them. And so I'm going to go get them by any means necessary, right? I'm going to go get to them, right? I'm going to find a way to go meet their families. But 99% of the time, it's all friends and referrals. You know, we have like a 6-month waiting list, you know, so I take my time, you know. Like I told you, I have this vision for Lifeline. That's a 100-year vision that allows me the luxury not to rush, you know. So I'm like building this company, like I'm winning this race at a turtle's pace. You know what I mean? And so, great clients bring great clients. As you know, great people hang around great people. So great, and I can spend 5 minutes with somebody and know, okay, that's a lifeline guy, or that's a lifeline gal. Like they, you know, we're going to be good, and then they'll bring friends. But it's all referrals. And that's how I like it, because I don't have to do the shiving and dancing, if that makes sense.
No shucking and jiving, you know, and high-fiving.
Yeah, I'm not doing none of that. You know what I mean? So if somebody that you love and trust tells you about me, then and then somebody I love and trust, it's an easier conversation, because they already know how the kitchen. They've already been in the system. So that's how I like it. I like referrals.
Let me ask you this. For just general anybody, what's the most important part of a financial plan? You're a financial planner.
Yeah.
What's the building blocks to wealth? Like, what's the most important thing that you have to do?
Yo, that's such a great question, man. The most important thing that you have to do is believe that you deserve it. You know, like, people, there's an optimism you have to have to plan for tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, you innately believe that, okay, if I do this and I save and I put away retirement, there's an optimism in your heart that believe that your tomorrows can be better than your today's, and your today's can be better than your yesterday's, right? And so we have to get to the core of somebody's soul to help them understand that they're worthy of a financial plan and they're worthy of a better tomorrow, right? Like, they're so, if you go to you guys' platform, I mean, you guys have done an amazing job, just all the tools, all of the wisdom, all of the lesson plans for anybody to transform from where they are to where they need to be. The information that you guys have put together is unbelievable. It's impeccable, right? So it's like, but how do you get somebody to feel like they're worthy of that journey?
Yeah.
And that's what people don't understand in finance, man. Like, it's not about stocks, bonds, investments, taxes, not about that. It's all behavioral. It's all psychology. It's all like, if you grew up in an environment where nobody's ever believed in you, right? Nobody, you've been put down, you know, America's had a knee on your neck for your whole life. When do you start to breathe and start to think about, okay, let me plan for tomorrow, right? You're like, fuck that, I'm living for today. You see what I'm saying? So the most important thing, in my honest opinion, man, is like sitting down with somebody and dealing with the trauma, dealing with that generational pain, and getting them to a place where they're healthy to receive whatever transformation advice that you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the book I'm working on. I'm working on a book called The Humble Way, 10 Steps to Financial Freedom. And it's all behavioral. You know, just trying to get somebody's mind to shift. Because once that shift happens, and you as a teacher, you see it in the kid. Yeah. Once that shift happens, oh, it's over.
It's a light bulb. It's a light bulb effect.
It's over, but yeah. Man, it starts in here. You know what I'm saying? And what I've seen is that when it comes to financial literacy in our community, we've been, you know, it's like there's a trauma there to where like you've been living check to check for so long. That you haven't even thought about, you know, planning for tomorrow when you're trying to get through today. You know what I mean? So that the most important thing I think is to put that joy and that spirit back in somebody where they go, you know what, my life has worth, and my life, the days of my life, you know, can be better, and they deserve to be better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And once you get there, then you have an opportunity to be able to put together a financial plan that somebody can stick to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the most important thing is when you get to a financial plan is you really have to understand your spending and why you make certain decisions that you make. You know what I mean? I believe that spending is directly linked to your value system. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like whatever you value, wherever you are, whatever values or principles you embody, you can be found in that money trail. You know what I mean? And so you can't invest, you can't save, you can't do anything if somebody has a crazy spending. You know, if their values haven't been set in a way where their spending is under control.
Discipline.
Yeah. Discipline. Yeah.
So you started in around 2009, 2010.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so you're getting to the point now where you're having guys and ladies who gone into a career and are now probably retired from their career.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so number one, as they transition into that new part of their life, is that same family that you built around them now guiding them maybe into a new career or entrepreneurial world? And on the other end of the spectrum, the people who are just starting, are we getting their minds thinking, right? Because at the end of the day, they are high paid employees. Mm-hmm. Are we getting them ideas to say, all right, here's some entrepreneurial things based on your personality?
Yeah.
Are we doing that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. So for me, you know, you have to start with the end in mind. And, you know, athletes, especially athletes, they die twice. Like the entertainers can stay creative their whole lives. So even if they don't want to act anymore, they still, you know, there's so many things that they because they have a skill set that doesn't expire. But our athletes, man, even if you have a long career, you're still going to retire in your 30s. Now you still have another 60-70 years to go. So what are you going to do with the next chapter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you see, what breaks my heart, where you see a lot of retired guys, you know, end up like, you know, suicidal, things of that nature, because now everybody's gone that was there, that was making money. You know, the marketing agents are gone, the sports agents are gone, the financial advisors are gone. Everybody is gone who was on the payroll getting money from, now that you retired. There's another kid coming. And so for me, for all my retired guys, it was so important for me that their second career is smooth, right? Or if they don't, if they just want to, because you miss so much time being an athlete. You know, it didn't hit me, man. I was talking to somebody like a while ago. He said, you know what? When they retired, he was like, this is my first Thanksgiving. I haven't had Thanksgiving with my family. You know what I mean? I was like, that's crazy, because you know, they miss everything.
Yeah.
So whether you want to go right into a new career, or like a new challenge, we have to make a plan for that. Or if you just want to take your kids to school for a minute, you know what I mean? Things that we take
for granted.
They'll pick them up or coach that little league team or whatever. We have protected your wealth so much that you can do whatever you want to do. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing that you need to do, right?
Hmm.
But it's so important that when they at the height of their career, that they build the relationships that are going to help them transcend the next chapter of their career. So I'm always forcing clients to come with me to conferences. I'm always forcing them to take this meeting, take that meeting. Hey, when you land in the city, you may have to play on Sunday, but that Saturday, like, you have some time off, you know what I mean? So instead of hanging with the boys or going to the, let's just go take a meeting in that city, you know? And it's going to be hard when you're 20, 21, 22 to kind of know what you want to do 10 years from now, but just keep taking meetings, you know what I mean? And just keep meeting good people And eventually you're gonna figure it out. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I feel like my role as a wealth manager is a lifelong role. And so it's very, very important that I'm not going anywhere, right? So it's very, very important that each decade, especially post retirement, that these athletes predominantly are still successful.
Yeah. What about the mental piece? Because obviously you're the wealth manager, but we've seen athletes and entertainers who struggle with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so we saw Kevin Love, who said, "You know what? I need to step away." Simone Biles at the Olympics, "I need to step away." What about that component? Is that something that your team is building, or down the road we're looking like we need to add this component because more athletes we're seeing this is happening more frequently?
Yeah, another great question. You know, I grew like when I started finances, I always managed finances since day one in an equilateral triangle. One side of that triangle was the economic capital. Of course, it's the financial planning, taxes, investments, you name it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the other triangle was what I call a social capital. Like, what do you want your legacy to be? And how are you impacting your family, your neighborhood, your community, the state, the country, and eventually the world? What's that plan? And the other plan was what you're talking about, this mental wealth, spiritual capital. It's like, how are you healing? You know what I mean? Like, what books are you reading? Are you talking to a therapist? How's your mental? How are you feeling? I've always managed a client, especially these really dynamic athletes, especially the football stars, in that equilateral triangle. You know what I mean? And not one triangle was more important than the other, right? Because if you have somebody who's mentally and spiritually, man, growing and healing, they're making a big impact, you know, and they're living a life that's bigger than themselves, and then they're doing something they're doing the right things with their finances, you have a really, really, really complete human being, right? And that person can change the world. But since day one, I've understood that trauma, and we've always managed. I've always thought of myself like, I don't really manage wealth. I manage wellness.
Mm.
So that's a great question, Troy. Yeah.
Pleasure, my brother. So what's your plans? Like, what's your next 10 years look like for you? What would you like to take the company? Like, what's your, I know you say you're writing a book. Like, what's on your vision board for this year and the next decade?
You know, it's a really, really great question. You know, and I've started to take life 10 years at a time, you know, and then divide those 10 years into halves. So, the first five and the second five. And I was talking to my mentor about this. And you know, when I think about, I'm 35, so I'm going to the second part of my 40s. You know what I mean? And so I try to.
Yes, he said he's 35. he's only 35.
I was joking with Troy. You got to count those like Ugandan years. You know, those are dog years, man. I'm 75, but for me, I think the next goal that we after is on the finance side is we want to build you know this black owned RIA that's managing over $1 billion. So that's the goal financially. Can you imagine how powerful that is to have the biggest names in the world who have the biggest influence and their money has been protected, grown, and transferred, and you have a collective family, a lifeline that has $1 billion in assets? I mean, that's going to be incredible. You know, so that's kind of like what we eyeing on. But I was telling you guys earlier, my goal is, I look at, you know, if you look at like the Goldman Sachs or Merrill Lynch, I mean, those are human beings, right? There was a guy named Merrill and there's a guy named Lynch. There was a guy named Goldman and a guy named Sachs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you look at Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan, those are people, right? And obviously they did what they did to get there. We're going to do ours differently, but I want to build my 100-year plan is to build a black dynasty like that, right? And be able to protect and grow and transfer black wealth globally. Right. So if you're in South America, you know, obviously the continent, you know, North America, and you want a place, man, where people look like you, where you're dynamic, you have a place where people look like you can manage your money. And then if you're someone like me or Rashad, or you want to work in this business, you have a place you can come. You know what I'm saying? And I always joke, if you come to Lifeline headquarters, man, you'll see, like, it'll feel like Spelman and and Morehouse had a baby. You know what I'm saying? It's beautiful in there. So man, I want to build something that's going to last the test of time. And that's why, like, I don't sell my company no matter how many, like, offers I get from these wirehouses. I want to see something that can stand the test of time.
Powerful.
Yeah.
How often do you go back to Uganda? Because I was reading, right?
Yeah.
You have a son.
Yeah, two boys.
Two boys, yeah. And so, like, they've never, this is interesting. When we talk about generational wealth and generational freedom, they've never seen your father's hard work and mom's hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
They see you work, and it's like, okay, daddy has a cool job. But how do we get to the point where we instill those values and those morals inside of them so they can continue the legacy?
Yeah, no, great question. And, you know, and you got kids too, right?
Got two, yeah.
You have any?
Yeah, I got son.
Yeah, so you know, like all of us, you know, being successful, it's like you want to do enough for your children that that they get a fair shot at this thing, and they, you know what I mean, and that they have everything they need to be successful. But you don't want to do too much to whether you rob them of their own story, because that's the key in life, is your story, right? Because it's never about like what you become, but it's about who you become, right? And so when I think about my sons who are going to come into a world of opulence, you know, my oldest, who's seven, like I teach him, you know, you spend a third, you save a third, you give a third. I keep it that simple, right? And when he's old enough, I do want to take him back home. So for example, for his fall break, you know, I took him and we just spent like 5 days at orphanages, you know what I mean? Like cooking, cleaning, playing with the kids. And after we left the orphanages, I said, why was it so important? What do you think was so important for me that we spent time doing this? And he said, well, Papa, he said, two reasons. One, so I can bring joy to others. And then two, so I can be more grateful for the life that I do have, you know? So it's important that you don't shelter them, and like you put them, that they can just kind of see and be more grateful for the life that they do have. So, you know, I used to go back to Uganda, man, every 2 years, but right now there's like a lot of political conflict. My brother, Bobby Wine, who's the people's elected president, you know, we still suffering from a dictator, Yoweri Museveni, who's killing everybody. And literally using the country as his piggy bank and putting his army everywhere, and we're still going through the same genocide today that we were going through back in the 70s and 80s. So it's not safe to bring my kids. But one day when my brother Bobby Wine is president, we'll rejoice in a free Uganda, and I can't wait to bring my sons to the village I grew up in, so they can see with their own lives. Because right now my oldest man, you know, he'll not finish his food. And I'll be like, finish your food. He'll come back to the dinner table, you know. Okay, I know. It's from you. You're from Uganda.
Yeah. They wish they had.
Where was J. Cole playing basketball at?
Yeah. Was that
J. Cole?
Rwanda.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our neighbor. Yeah.
That's next door, right?
Right next door. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But I can't wait, man. Can you imagine?
We coming with you.
Dude, that'd be incredible, man.
Yeah, we coming with you.
Free Uganda. We're gonna do this in Uganda.
Yeah, we coming.
You know,
that's a fact.
With the new president, it's gonna be incredible.
Yeah, we definitely owe Africa a second visit. We went a couple months ago. We went to Lagos, Nigeria, and we went to Egypt. So it was good vibes out there. So now we gotta go back. We gotta go to Ghana. We gotta go all over.
Oh man, that's
I just got a text about Ghana today.
Yeah. Well, you know I tell all my friends, man, I said, man, you gotta go home. You know, like go back home, and because you know we always get excited when we see our brothers from the States. You know, you guys put that love when you touch down. Right? It's like you never left. Right?
David O, shout out to him, and we interviewed him, and he was like, "Yeah, welcome home. First and foremost, welcome home.
Welcome home." Yeah, we get so excited when we see our brothers from the States, man. We get so excited. You gotta go to the continent.
That's absolutely.
What would you like to leave the people with? Anything that, you know, I know you're not really on social media like that, so I usually ask like social media handles, but you can say that if you want, but yeah, whatever you want to leave the people with.
Yeah, you can. I don't really post much, but you can find me at Humble with the period at the end on IG, and at H2 Humble on Twitter. But for me, you know, my goal is to help people transform tragedy to triumph. Like, you know, it's wherever you find yourself, right? Whether it's whatever dream you might have, man, like whether it's starting your own financial firm or creating, you know, a legendary platform to educate the masses, or whatever your dream is, man, just go do it. You know what I mean? Just go do it. And what I find in life is like people, the reason why people don't achieve their goals is they don't have an accurate gauge. They overestimate their skill set and they overestimate their work ethic. So if you're out there, man, it's like have an accurate gauge on your skill set, because then it allows you to like keep working and getting better, and have an accurate gauge on your work ethic, because man, you can do anything that you want to do. And America, man, you know, has its America obviously has its pain, and it has so much that it has to grow from. But I don't know anywhere else, man, where a kid can come from a mud hut in Uganda and build what I've built, you know what I mean, in one generation. You know what I mean? So I remember coming to this country, man, and I couldn't believe that if you went to a particular spot in your neighborhood, this yellow bus would pick you up in the morning. And then this bus would drive you to this school. You don't have to pay to go to this school. You know what I mean? You would get out of this school, and then you would have all these teachers who are all really, really knowledgeable in different subjects. And they'll teach you math and science and English and social studies, you name it. If you didn't have lunch, you can get free lunch. And then you got to take the books home. And then if you, at the end of the school, if you went to the same place that bus dropped you off at in the morning, they'll take you and pick you up in the morning. You know what I mean? I'm mm-hmm. from a mud hut in Uganda. I couldn't believe this shit. I was like, where am I? Where am I? You know what I'm saying? And when you come to this, you know, and there's an appreciation that I want people to have when you grow up in this country. And I'm not saying, man, that I'm not saying any place is perfect, but there is an opportunity here where you can be whatever, where you can literally change the trajectory of your family's life. And so I want to be an example for people to look at my story and say, man, this kid lost everything, right? He came from genocide in East Uganda, and he came here and built, you know, and was able to build something big, right? It's not that it's been easy, but it's been meaningful. You know what I mean? So my last words, just like whoever's watching this, is don't look and find faults of why you can't do something, man. Like, look and find inspiration. You know what I mean? And I hope I can be that for somebody today.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Troy, housekeeping items?
Oh, man, powerful, powerful. Shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Shout out to all our EYL University members, all the earners that are in there, over 12,000 of you. We love every single one of you. Shout out to all our professors for just educating the masses. Shout out to the whole team, man. Shout out to the merch team. It's been an incredible journey, man, and I'm just uplifted, man. Shout out to Humble for blessing us today, man. I greatly appreciate you being here.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next
week.
Shout
out to y'all, man. Oh. Shout out to y'all. You guys are legendary. I think I've done like 2 interviews, man. When they call me, I'm there.
That's why he said Google him. Good luck.
Yeah.
This will be the testimony right here.
You guys, I want to give you your flowers, man. Man, I wish there were words to adequately describe how important what you guys are doing. You are leveling the playing field and giving everybody access to information to transform their lives. May you guys continue to be blessed.
Appreciate
May you
it.
Continue to be successful. And may the good Lord bless the hands of your work. You know?
Well, God's people said amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen. All right, God, thank you for rocking us. I'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.